Welcome back to the Policy Viz podcast. I'm your host, John Schwabisch. On this week's episode, I am sitting in Paris doing a recap of the 2018 Open Viz conference here in Paris, which was amazing. You're probably hearing a few people in the background still chatting. And I'm fortunate enough to be surrounded by three amazing artists, academics, data visualization designers who wanted to sit down and chat about their favorite parts of the conference. So what we're going to do is have each of them introduce themselves for you folks who are listening at home, and then we're going to talk about our favorite talks and things that we took away from. So Mike, I'm going to start with you.
All right, excited to be here. My name is Mike Freeman. You can find me on Twitter as @MF_Viz, and I'm a faculty member at the University of Washington Information School.
I'm Zan Armstrong. I'm Zan Strong on Twitter. I'm a freelance data visualization designer and engineer. I'm currently working on a long-term project with a team of scientists at Google.
Hi, I'm Nadi Bremer. I'm a data visualization freelancer. I'm going to name a Visual Cinnamon. And I work at home with my cat in the Netherlands.
Terrific. Great. Well, welcome all, Zan and Nadia, back to the show. Mike, this will be your first time, but we'll get you back soon. Okay. So, 2 days, first things first, overall impressions of the conference.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing, really special to be here in Paris for the first time for the conference. A lot of Americans still came over because they've loved the conference in the past, and got a ton of Europeans and other people around the world, so a really special community.
Yeah, exactly. I felt that was a really good mix of the multinationality this time, especially. And also the talks, I really love just the general balance of more design focus, more math focus, more tool focus. Really, really good conference.
Yeah. Great. I also want to talk about a little bit, we should talk about like the structure of the conference. Because I think there's like a lot of time for talking and eating lunch and like networking that a lot of conferences don't have. And I feel like that's one of the things that makes this conference special. Okay, so we're going to start with you, Mike. Your favorite presentation in the last 2 days, I'll of course link to the Open Viz site on the show notes, and soon they will also post videos, but I think we're going to have at least 3 or 4 of our favorite talks from the last 2 days. So Mike, let me start with you. What was your favorite? What did you like about it? What did you learn?
So one of my favorite parts about how the conference has gone the last 2 days is that there has been not only a focus on developing our own methods about design or programming techniques, but there's been a lot of outward focus, so a lot of thought about making really careful design decisions because of the impact they'll have on other people, and also taking these skills and bringing them to bear on important political topics. So, not surprisingly, my favorite talk came from Aaron Williams from the Washington Post, whose talk largely centered around an article that they had released called America is More Diverse Than Ever, But Still Segregated. This is a really thoughtful use of various metrics of segregation to try and understand the racial composition of a variety of cities in the United States. It was a really beautifully done piece and incredibly delivered talk, and was a pertinent example of how we can take data visualization skills and help shed light on nuanced and emerging topics in the US and around the world.
That's great. Okay, so Zan, favorite talk?
I'm going to cheat a little bit and say one thing that I really liked about two talks was I really enjoy kind of both break the rules for a purpose. And so Matthew Kay talked about Bayesian analysis and how it's really important to make it designed to make it hard to ignore uncertainty so you can't just like not look at it. And that really influences design and making, he pointed out the New York Times anxious thing that we all know about, the anxiety is actually like that shows some of the uncertainty, and that can be a positive. And I also really enjoyed Frederica's talk that slow was intentional, and the slowness of interpretation and engaging was an intentional part of that presentation that I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite talk. It was a tough choice, but eventually I think I really, really liked Steve's Franconeri, I'm sorry if I mispronounced it, from Northwestern University, who was talking about thinking with data visualizations fast and slow. And his was really about the research that he's been doing about how people interpret visualizations and how some things are, we can sort of see at a glance, and some things take more time in the process and hit some. I really like that talk, especially. I've been into the kind of the psychology of seeing how we're not really seeing reality for ever since I discovered data visualization, and he really brought it home towards data visualization. So he had amazing examples. Something that we see like an outlier immediately, but make a slight change of it, and suddenly we have to do a lot of sort of slow processing to do that. And I really liked how he showed his research in very approachable ways, and the things that he found and things that he wanted to do in the future. So yeah, that was really, really good talk.
Those were all great. One theme I think that at least I saw that sort of flowed through a lot of the talks was on uncertainty, which as Andy mentioned. Also, of course, with any academic research, we've got a lot of uncertainty going on. Before we talk more about the conference, which I want to do, I want to get your thoughts on visualizing uncertainty. I think it's like one of the biggest challenges. And some of the talks were about, you know, Bayesian inference and showing, I would say, like uncertainty in sort of complicated looking ways. But how do you get to present data with uncertainty to, you know, everyday people who are looking at a bar chart or looking at a line chart? So anyone have thoughts on like how to visualize uncertainty, how to convey uncertainty, statistics, probability to our audiences?
I don't have any of those. I want to point out something that is particularly complicated about it isn't just about getting three times as many numbers. It isn't just about showing now an upper and lower bound on top of the average that you calculated, but it's also balancing generating a belief in your numbers, right? These are the right numbers, that this is clear in a sort of authoritative way. And at the same time, communicating, they might be wrong. Mm. Right? And I think a lot of people want to both express their confidence in their methods or in their approach, and at the same time express that those approaches inherently have some sort of limitations. And striking that balance makes it additionally hard. So I'm sure one of these brilliant people here has a great way to do that.
So yeah, I think uncertainty is a really big deal. I think especially around the question of where the data even comes from in the first place, and what data isn't represented. Is your data actually representing what you think it is? I think so many times there is a talk. Mariah was talking a lot about proxies and that we often use proxies, and those can be valuable, but we should be really intentional about noticing the proxies that we're using and recognizing the potential challenges there. And I think also there was a number of facts about machine learning here, which I think is also an interesting place for uncertainty, that there's kind of inherently a lot of uncertainty in how the decisions are being made. People explore kind of exposing some of that, and also like using that uncertainty or being accepting the uncertainty and still using it as a tool. And how do we think about that?
Right. So do you think about communicating the uncertainty to people in specific ways, or is it more for you, Zan, I guess more of, I'm working with these data, I want to make sure I have the data right, and I'm going to present it, but maybe not actually, you know, showing the uncertainty or showing the, you know, confidence bounds or something like that. I know it's a hard question, right?
Yeah, this is a really hard question. I mean, I want to say, like, yeah, of course I want to show the uncertainty, but I think it's really important to push in that direction of showing the uncertainty. I think it's really complex in terms of, like, are we showing that in the graph? If we are, how do we show uncertainty about uncertainty or what it means? There was a academic paper a couple years ago about all the different definitions of uncertainty and using this very similar glyphs for very different definitions of uncertainty. I see it more as a constant of how we think about our data. And part of the wonderful thing that, like, data is complicated, the world is complicated, people are complicated. that's part of what makes it magical. And embrace that. And different projects are going to require different ways of thinking about it.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't have a real good answer to that either. I haven't had to, or maybe have ignored uncertainty for a long time. I do have something though that's kind of related to that, and it has to do with aggregation. So I think a lot about the mean or the mode, the 50% quantile, and that it is not necessarily, usually not a good sort of way to show the underlying distribution. So I'm always, things that I like to do in my visualizations, if possible, is show the context. So show a lower level of detail without having to activate so that I can tell people more. I can maybe highlight the median, but then I still want to show the other things that are surrounding it, that where it comes, where that median comes from. Which always, in my mind, these uncertainty and kind of these aggregation things are kind of connected in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Both difficult to do, but the one thing I think about a lot, whereas the other thing I have to admit, I don't think
That's okay. That's okay. It's an interesting topic. So the one talk that I think was sort of uniformly beloved last 2 days here was the talk by Amanda Cox and Kevin Quealy from The Times. Who wants to summarize the talk?
So their talk was called Disagreements, and it was a wonderful back and forth between the two of them on things that they just generally don't agree on, which I thought was really great. It's not that everything is always good, or with data visualization, there's always a sort of a subjective factor to it, and that's what they really showed in this talk. And they had their own reasons for why maybe. Was it Amanda is okay with charts not being simple, whereas Kevin is like, no, charts have to be simple.
Right.
That was just one of them. And then they showed some wonderful examples, and they showed some wonderful personal Slack messages, the wa.png, more A's. And it was, it was a really good set of these examples. I mean, you think about just that, it's a gray area, and there are reasons for using one or the other in different circumstances.
Right. Okay, so do you find yourself on Team Amanda or Team Kevin?
I can be very clear that I'm on Team Amanda.
Okay, Team Amanda. So, Zan, Team Kevin or Team Amanda?
Team Amanda.
Okay, so why Team Amanda?
I really enjoy how she thinks about things. I mean, I should say, like, they're both amazing, and I super loved love both perspectives. I enjoy how she frames things. I really enjoy... she sees complexity even behind the simple, and I think even simple things are complex. And I enjoyed how one of the questions was with that the famous odometer of the election. Is that a simple chart or is that a complex chart? And Kevin said it was simple, and Amanda said it's complex. And I think there's a lot of complexity behind simple things that end up kind of simple in the end. I think that's. I'm a fan.
Yeah, I think that was like one of the great examples of like, is that a complex chart or a simple chart? I think it's like a super complex chart. So I'm definitely, for that one, I'm on Team Amanda. Okay, Mike, Team Amanda or Team Kevin?
I'll follow suit. not to say Team Amanda, but with my former question, which is to avoid answering this question directly, and say what I thought was so amazing was not one side versus the other, but was the generating source of these different things they were in tension about was because they wanted to figure out the best way to do something for their audience. It wasn't just about a whimsical opinion about X or Y or Z, or that there was a preference in color, but there was such attention to detail and such care for the consequences of their actions that there was beautifully and hilariously debated. But the reason that there was such fervent debate was because there was such concern about what sort of interpretations or misinterpretations there would be. So I think the thing that I sided with was not one person or the other, but the tension between them that I thought was pushing their work forward.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's talk about the structure of the conference. So we've all met at multiple conferences, many conferences. What, in your mind, makes this conference sort of special in terms of the structure? And then I want to talk about sort of take-home lessons from the 2 days, but just in terms of how the talks are put together, the breaks are put together, what does this conference stand out in a way that's special relative to other conferences? And if you think it's a great way to structure it, should other conferences try to mimic this approach?
I mean, one simple thing that I really love is that it's a one-track conference, and everything is videotaped and put online later. And I think that's both of those really, and there's a lot of care taken and really thinking about how to curate that, because everybody's going to be sitting and watching every person, and that's going to be a long-term experience that hundreds of thousands of people will watch later. I think that really, people are really proud of what they present. They put a lot of work into what they're sharing and how they're sharing it. Really value the audience's time, both here and everywhere. And I think It's just a really, really thoughtful format that just creates really fantastic talks and a lot of thoughtfulness.
Anybody else?
As you mentioned, they put a lot of emphasis on having sufficient times for breaks and for lunch, and they put the structural pieces in place to make sure that people had time to share ideas with one another, that it wasn't just a passive receiving of the information through the talks, but also you had time to, on a two-hour boat ride around Paris, spend time with the other people in your field or in other fields and discuss these ideas, and similarly did that through coffee breaks and lunch, and providing that amount of time and those fun environments in which to do that makes it an opportunity through which to say all of us
right.
were able to meet one another.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anything else to add?
No, they said it all.
They said it all. Yeah. All right. All right, cool. So are there specific things, or maybe even just general themes, that you are going to be able to take home with you and use in your work, either specific techniques or coding snippets that you saw, or sort of more general themes that you saw, that you learned, that you think you can use when you go home?
One very practical thing for me was the T-SNE clustering. That was the first three talks both show the visualization that involved this kind of clustering technique. And more, it also showed like how you can then go to a grid-based thing, and Ian was talking about the quick draw, and with different people drawing different kinds of cats, and how you could visualize that. And I really want to use the T-SNE. I've used it before, but now I have some other new ideas, and I've already talked with Ian about some of the things that he can help me with, to do dragons and mermaids.
Wait, now I can't ask you about Dragon and Mermaid Project? Okay, we'll hold on to that one. Okay.
But that was a very, very practical one. And the other one is that you can do more than you think you can, and that these people that are showing these techniques, and that the end result is truly amazing, and then they have like a tidbit of information about, oh, I was using this, or I used this hack. This general idea of if we're all just people doing our thing, and it all starts from a really simple starting point, and then having that spark of an idea, that's really good. I guess that's sort of my general vibe that I got here.
So you feel kind of inspired?
Yes.
To go back. Okay. Good. I mean, that's a huge part of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Zan?
So I feel a little repetitive. Something that's been on my mind is how to, like, I think we often think of your statistics, and there's viz and like the complementary, but like they're kind of different things.
Right.
And I think that there's a lot of interesting things going on, whether it's ML or sampling or other places. There were some nice examples. Ian Johnson, Moritz, Sean Carter, Matthew Kay, and probably a few others that I'm missing, about using stats as part of the input, part of thinking about complexity and kind of having a way to explore complexity. That's also been in my own work. So excited to not just have a kind of these two different parallel paths, but how can they actually support each other?
Right. Right.
So I had to come here for a week and cancel a week of class. I had to come to Paris. It was tough.
It's tough.
But
the sacrifices you make.
I know.
That's tough.
But, you know, I do legitimately take careful consideration if I'm going to not be around campus, because I want to do right by my students. And when I think about my takeaways, I think of what I'm bringing back. Right? What am I bringing back? And I'm inspired by how much care is put into developing graphics, particularly when they're focused on issues like racism or climate change. And I'm really heartened that I'm coming back and showing awesome examples of visualization applied to trying to understand and communicate about social issues, rather than coming back and just showing like really cool whiz-bang animations of whatever transition cool stuff, which is awesome, right? And it drives engagement and it gets people excited. But to be able to channel that excitement towards something that is valuable is the whole reason that I think many of us are here.
I have one more
thing. Yeah, yeah.
This is a tiny thing after such an inspiring thing that Mike just said. But one tiny thing is Sean Carter's not the only one to do this, but he did it really well in this talk of just the using something to connect words to other stuff. He used color in that case of like, oh, there's this highlight color in this equation, and now they're connected. And like as a super specific thing, I'm going to do that a lot more.
Yeah, that's great. So I think the one last sort of general question, because Mike, you mentioned like the whiz bang
And obviously we saw a lot of interactivity, but it seems to me lately that there's been sort of a pullback in a lot of places from making the big whiz-bang interactive thing. And I even feel like here, having been to this conference for multiple years, that there seemed to be even kind of a not as big of emphasis on the big interactive pieces, that there was more like, we made this map, right? Like Aaron Williams talk about segregation in America, the map itself, it wasn't interactive in sort of the sense we might have had 2 or 3 years ago where you'd click on all the dots and something would pop up. Do you see that? Do you feel that people are starting to pull back a little bit from interactivity, or are they using it differently?
Yeah, definitely. I feel that people are realizing now that it's not necessarily the interactivity, but it's the story that you want to tell that is most important, and that maybe as journalists in general, you have to guide people through that story just as tell them and keep them on the focus that you want to keep the focus on exactly. So that's, I think, maybe a reason why interactivity is less, also because it is quite complex to do. And that's why you see more of these scrolling-telling or storytelling or just text with a visual and then some text and another visual. It doesn't have to all be in one visual. Although I have to admit, I can still very much appreciate, for example, the talk by Brian Jacobs from National Geographic about the amazing piece he did for the Cassini mission and the dragon, the dinosaur. Thing.
Yeah.
I'm still happy those things happened. But the thing is, though, those two things are amazing, but they're not that interactive. You, again, follow the story that they want to tell you. But it's, I would say that's kind of, the visuals themselves were really kind of whiz-bang. Up there,
right?
Like, whoa.
Yeah, but not a lot of stuff to actually do with them.
No, you can just scroll through them these days. Yeah, that's kind of the direction I see more things going.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Sure. So, I think we all know to butcher some Ben Schneiderman, visualization is about answers, not pictures.
Right.
We're not here to make more fun pictures. We're here to try and understand. I think that perhaps we the community have invested more time in making things like cool and fun, and we're realizing that it's not always helpful. So we are trying to find the best way to answer questions, and sometimes that's interactive, but perhaps the polish factor of that has worn off, and we're able to rein it in a little bit and be satisfied with a moderate amount of interactivity as it can answer our questions.
It's a truly live podcast this time.
Yes. We're really holding down that, finishing the party.
Yeah.
I think also, I think it kind of like we've had more experience over a much longer period of time of thinking intentionally about form and visualization. I always love historic viz and thinking about what you can do, like many, many hundreds of years of pen and pencil viz. More recently, what we can do as we have computers And I think as interactivity came on the scene, it was really exciting, and it was kind of like, we have this new sandbox. And I think now people are starting to refine how we play in that sandbox and being able to kind of be more directive or more intentional about the types of motion or animation or how we manage time in those experiences.
Yeah.
So I think it's just kind of a really exciting time as people kind of explore these more intentional ways of engaging.
Awesome. Terrific. Well, it sounds like everybody had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing probably to mention for those of you who weren't here, Lynn Turney was the sort of program chair along with many others and also the Lyon Business School who helped sponsor the conference. An amazing event for 2 days. They took, I think, good care of us. good French food, a great lineup of speakers. So thanks to the three of you for coming on the show. Thanks to everyone for tuning into this week's episode. If you have comments or questions, please let me know. So until next time, this has been the Policy Biz Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.